There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
It's time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm back from vacation, baby! Like, as we record this, like, an hour or two ago. Kurt Hoag is not back from Pittsburgh yet. He is sitting in a Pittsburgh hotel room where he just saw the Brewers take 2 of 3 from the Pirates. Ooh, it could have been 3. It was so close. 1 out away from being a sweep to cap a ridiculously good road trip. The Brewers go 7-3. Yeah, could have been 8-2, but still pretty good. He was in New York to watch them take 3 of 4 from the Mets, followed by the series against the Pirates. The Brewers are tied for first place in the National League Central. Not bad. Probably could be a little better, but still not bad. They appear to be playing good baseball again. Like, they're kind of creeping back into that April Brewers territory. And they've got a homestand coming up now, a week of home baseball games before the start of the All-Star break. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show. Kurt Hoag on the other line. He is the Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Kurt, actually, we're going to start, before we get into kind of the craziness of the week, we'll start with what happened at the very, very end, and that is the naming of the National League All-Star teams. This was not a huge surprise. Devin Williams, Brewers closer, who's been lights out all year, clear-cut All-Star, makes the cut for the Milwaukee Brewers. The first-place Milwaukee Brewers do not have a second All-Star. I know we've talked about Christian Yelich being maybe that guy. He's been just red hot. We have to talk more about him, but not making the All-Star team. Maybe he still does. We know how this works. Guys fall away. People get named as replacements. It still could happen. But I know you're still you kind of feel like he's got a case. He should be on that NL All-Star team. So I'll let you have the floor a little bit. Is that still true? Do you feel like he got snubbed a little bit here?
A little bit. It's actually kind of funny because the other snubs make Yelich like less of a snub, if that makes sense.
Tell me more. I don't get. I haven't even looked at the team.
This is my general thought with the All-Star teams as a whole this year. That there's some really not good picks. Like Wander Franco, JR, is like third in baseball in wins above replacement, and he did not make the All-Star game.
What's going on there?
Which is wild. So it's much of a sin to a lesser degree in the NL outfield. Because Lourdes Gurriel has had a good year, but he made it over Nimmo, he made it over Yelich, he made it over Tatis. I understand why Tatis was not picked. Players and coaches probably didn't want, you know, a guy that just been suspended pop for PEDs in the game. So that would make sense, even though he has the best numbers out of all of them. So I could have understood, like, Nimmo over Yelich. I wouldn't have put up an argument about that. I would pick Yelich over Nick Castellanos, who made it as well, but that one's a bit less of a stink. But the Lourdes Gurriel one just doesn't make any sense to me. He hasn't been better at fielding, he hasn't been better at running the bases, and he also hasn't been better at hitting. So, I don't know.
About the only thing you could say is he plays for a team that is legitimately one of the better surprises of the of the season, the Arizona Diamondbacks, so there's at least that, right? I don't know if the Brewers...
Yeah, but they left Wander Franco off, and he's on the best team.
Yeah, that's true. I have no explanation for that. American League, what are you doing? Guys, Wander Franco is one of the biggest stars in the game. But, yeah, I could see it. And like I said, you know, you're going to get between now and the All-Star game, even a week from now, you're going to get about 5 to 6 guys who back out of the game and have suddenly something else going on or a minor injury flaring up, and maybe that opens the door for someone like Christian Yelich. Although, maybe it opens the door for these guys that are also not on the team yet, you know, that probably should be there as well. So I don't know, but Devin Williams makes the cut. We knew that was coming. He had another good week, closed it down on Sunday to wrap up a save and give the Brewers that series win against Pittsburgh. He had another high wire act save earlier this week, although now that I think about it, I don't even quite remember if that was in Cleveland or if that was in New York. They have run together in my post-vacation haze. But he's been very special, and you've written a lot about him. You talked to a lot of the guys who played with him with Team USA Baseball. You kind of did that over the course of the year and wrote that story at jsonline.com a couple weeks ago. You wrote recently about how he's gone really back to his cutter more. We haven't seen maybe the super special airbenders that show up on Pitching Ninja as much because he isn't necessarily relying on just that pitch. You know, in a way, it's kind of the reverse of Corbin Burns, who seems to be relying heavier than ever on the cutter. Whereas Devin Williams is taking his bread and butter and just, you know, maybe adding a little bit extra to accompany that. So what are you seeing from him this year? What has made him so sustainably special for this Brewers bullpen?
Kind of the same thing, honestly. I asked him today what sort of big adjustments he feels like he's made to sustain this insane level that he's been at his first 4 years in the big leagues. I mean, most guys, like, there are not a lot of guys who've started their careers in the way that Devin Williams has started his career. It's quite ridiculous when you think about it, actually, how good he's been. He's kind of been the same guy and as he's been in previous years. Like, the fastball's maybe a little bit better, even though the velocity's not there. But he is just the ultimate competitor. He's the guy you want in the ninth inning role because of that. And really, like, it's nice to kind of get that All-Star notch checked off, because it in a way just like validates the greatness of the first 4 full seasons of his career, really.
Yeah, and this being, of course, his second All-Star appearance back-to-back with last year. So now you kind of think of him as just a brand. His brand is All-Star level brand, you know, like, he's going to get selected even if his numbers aren't as good as they are. But obviously they're really quite good. You know, Christian Yelich is only a 2-time All-Star, which I always think is kind of funny. I mean, he was an All-Star those 2 years that he was so good, 2018 and 2019, but you know, that's it. It's just those 2 seasons. He was never an All-Star with Florida or Miami, I should say. So he and Devin Williams have now been an All-Star the same number of times, which is kind of interesting. Williams did pitch last year in the game, looked very, very good doing it. Not sure if we'll see him again this year, don't know. Although Orlando Arcia, starting shortstop for the National League, we'll definitely see that. That is a heck of a Brewers connection.
Shout out Orlando.
Oh my gosh, what a year he's had. He was not, he wasn't going to be the starting shortstop for the Braves this year, but just had a tremendous spring training and has not slowed down. A really feel-good story. You know, this is probably not a situation where you look back and say, oh, the Brewers should have kept him or anything like that. You know, you could probably play the hindsight game if you really, really wanted to, but Arcia is a really great story, and I'm really happy to see him do this well. The Braves guys got a lot of votes. They're having a very good year and are heavily populating the starting lineup this year, and Arcia is going to get a shot to play in that game. That's really, really cool. Okay, so again, I'm going to work backward. I'm going to go now with the Sunday game against Pittsburgh. That was a win started by Colin Ray, who gave up a 2-run homer, but was around to get another decision. Another great showing from Colin Ray. You know, for a long time, we were looking at him as kind of the necessary evil of the rotation. That's really unfair to him, but, like, he was a guy that was there because other guys were hurt or underperforming, and he was doing enough to stay in the rotation. And that was fine, but you always figured at some point he was going to get replaced. Everybody was going to get healthy. Everybody was going to come back. But then Eric Lauer never really worked his way back into the rotation. He's now at AAA trying to figure things out a little bit. And I'm not going to tell you that Colin Ray's numbers are just still eye-popping or anything like that, but now that's back-to-back starts where he has worked into the seventh inning. It had been years since he had worked into the seventh inning. I mean, he allows 1 run on 3 hits against the Mets in a 2-1 win to open up the week, which was a really impressive outing. He's great again against the Pirates on Sunday. I mean, Colin Ray, man, like, who'd have thunk it? He's one of the biggest stories of the year at this point.
Yeah, Colin Ray's 3rd on the Brewers in innings pitched and game started.
What is going on?
I don't know who had that on their bingo card to start this season, but it certainly was not me. I do remember JR, though. I think it was after that first start in San Diego. where we were talking about it, and, you know, a lot of time guys will come up and like their first start from AAA can be a good one, simply because the league hasn't really seen them before. And also, right, like weird things can just happen in individual baseball games. We were talking, and okay, Colin Ray's, he's not going to be this good all year, but like he has big league stuff, and that kind of stood out in that game. And that's still just kind of what my general impression of him is. Like, it's definitely good enough stuff to get him through quality starts a decent chunk of the time that he goes out there. There's going to be some not so great starts because there's like swing and miss is not very prevalent in his game. But he commanded the zone really well on Sunday. He commanded the zone really well against the Mets. He just kind of knew how to attack hitters. They were being really aggressive, and he figured out pretty early what he needed to do. So, yeah, Colin Ray has been quite big for this team. It's, you know, it's not Brandon Woodruff, who we can get to what's sort of going on with that situation later. But if you need to get 13 starts out of a guy who like really hasn't done anything in the major league since 2016, that's generally not going to bode too well for you. But it has been, you know, it's been solid with Colin Ray.
Brewers have won 7 of the last 9 games that Colin Ray has pitched in. And with Julio Teheran taking maybe a step back this week, I mean, he was kind of, I think we all saw his production as really a great pleasant surprise, possibly unsustainable. To some degree, Ray might be that in that bucket as well. And, you know, one start does not negate what Julio Teheran has done this year. But, you know, at some point, people are going to hit him. They're going to figure out a way to make solid contact against him. And we saw that against the Mets this week. So, you know, there's going to come a point where, I don't want to call it smoke and mirrors, but like the Brewers are not going to be able to get lightning in a bottle all season long without getting, you know, Brandon Woodruff back and sort of re-solidifying the rotation. Maybe Eric Lauer does take that step forward and gets back into the mix. So you mentioned Brandon Woodruff. Let's jump out of sequence a little bit and talk about where you think the team is with him. I know you've written about him a little bit and his progress. I mean, after the All-Star break was kind of the tentative plan in the beginning. It's pretty clear it's not going to be right after the All-Star break. Hoping, I imagine, by the end of July. It's starting to feel like, you know, it's a little, you know, I'm sure he's going to come back at some point, but is he going to come back at a point where he can contribute enough starts to make a tangible difference for this team? That's the part now that isn't clear. So what are you hearing? What do you know about Brandon Woodruff's status at this point?
Yeah, he was supposed to throw a bullpen in Pittsburgh. He did not. He was on every 2 to 3 days throwing bullpen schedule. His body didn't quite recover as they'd hoped from his last one. We were trying to talk to him in Pittsburgh. We did not see him in the clubhouse either the last 2 days after Craig Council told us that he wasn't going to be throwing a bullpen. So I'm sure some more details on what exactly he was feeling, when he's going to throw next, will come out on the homestand. So keep your eyes peeled for that. They said it's just being cautious with it. It's not necessarily related to the shoulder injury that landed him on the injured list in the first place, which I guess is a positive thing. But the reality here is the timeline is just keeps getting pushed back. He's thrown 2 bullpens, gotten up to about 25 pitches. That's still a long way away from where he needs to be. He needs to get the pitch count built up, he needs to get some rehab starts in with the up downs and the innings. And so I still don't know when it's going to be, but I would have a hard time believing that a July start is possible at this point.
Yeah, it's ominous. It's getting to the point where you wonder if we are going to see him at all this year. Like, I know they're just being cautious, but this injury is so weird and unique as it is. And you know, it's not like there's a ton of track record with pitchers who've had it. When do you expect those guys back? And I know right away he said that the All-Star break was thrown out right away, which tells you right away they know it's a big deal. That's a serious deal. And as they work him back, you never know what's going to pop up for a guy who's now been sitting dormant, unable to pitch off a mound for 3 months. There's obviously going to be some you know, hiccups here and there. So pretty concerning, because I still think if this Brewers team is a playoff team, Brandon Woodruff is a part of that. There's just no way around it. They're not going to be a legitimate threat unless they can get Brandon Woodruff, especially because we've seen Freddie Peralta and Corbin Burns have hiccups all season long. You know, I don't think anything has really changed with those guys. They can still be dominant. We saw that with Burns on Saturday, which I'll get to in just a second. But there's going to be those big innings, you know. It happened against Burns. It happened against Peralta when the Brewers got out to a 4-0 lead against Pittsburgh on Friday, and then he gave three of those runs right back. These hiccups are going to happen. They're just happening this year with those guys. They really need that third option, that third really tough starter. And I don't know, man. It's getting a little worrisome, I'd say, if you're a Brewers fan. So to go to that Saturday game where Corbin Burns threw five perfect innings. Things fell apart a little bit for him from there, although that wasn't really ultimately the story. Burns was still plenty good, and the Brewers, of course, did end up winning the game, but it was 10-0 in the sixth inning. Suddenly, it was 11-8 in the eighth inning. They needed to bring in Yoel Piamp to lock that down after a rain delay, which worked out, but it was getting very, very dicey. Clayton Andrews, a guy who had just been called up, was unable to really to get just one final out against the Pirates. They were hitting him around pretty good, and oh my gosh, Kurt, give me a sense of what it was like watching that game on Saturday. That was nonsense.
It was absolute madness. I cannot fathom why the Pirates decided to delay the start of the game.
Yeah, that was a Cubs move right there.
Like, the rain was not going to be a problem. If it had caught, the little rain had caught Pittsburgh, like, it might have been a little drizzle. That they could have played through. I understand you don't want to start the game and have to stop the game, and all of a sudden the starters can't pitch. But it would have been a short enough delay, if you had to delay it, that the starters would have been just fine continuing on. It wouldn't have been like an hour delay or anything. It made no sense to me why we had a 40-minute delay when it was sunny. And that was just the start of things. That game was, like I said, true madness.
Yeah, and of course, the Brewers were coming off a game that they had lost in walk-off fashion, a really disappointing game on Friday. And then in this game, things just kind of kept getting, you know, they just could not lock things down. The Pirates scoring six runs in the eighth inning. They scored a couple against Burns. Burns still goes seven strong innings. And then six runs against the bullpen in the eighth inning, leading into an actual rain delay that, like you pointed out, may not have happened if they had just started the game on time when it wasn't really raining. After that delay, things go actually pretty quietly. The place pretty much empties out. Piamp comes in and locks that game down with three, a very quick ninth inning, a very quick 1-2-3 ninth inning. Wow. I don't want to pile on Clayton Andrews here. He was a guy that really worked really hard in the minor leagues, had some great success in the minors, deserved a shot to show what he could do in the big league level. Very rough debut for him ultimately, but the Brewers with Thomas Pannone on Friday night too, you know, a guy who gave up a couple runs and also is somebody who'd kind of been in the minors quite a bit with the Brewers and got a chance to show what he could do with the big league team, ultimately got designated for assignment. We will talk about Friday's game some more. The Brewers, I feel like, don't have that one or two guys in the minors that they can really bring up for bullpen help right now. That's kind of borne out over the course of the season. They've had guys like Tyson Miller, you know, take their shot. Ethan Small had an opportunity. You know, Peter Strzelecki has been sent to the minor leagues at this point. Like, they are short, true bullpen difference makers at this point, with the exception of maybe Abner Uribe, whose ceiling is high enough that I'm guessing the Brewers want to wait as long as they can to bring him up, since he's somebody that they picture in their long-term view, and they want to make sure he's absolutely ready to be in the big league level, to stay in the big league level. I guess Robert Gosser, who's doing really well, but he's a starter and is playing out as a starter. They don't want to burn him, bringing him up as a midseason bullpen. I mean, that would be a desperation move. So, I mean, it certainly they'll certainly make some moves at the deadline, I have to think, for bullpen arms. But I guess I don't have a question so much as just an observation that the Brewers' depth just really kind of lacking in this department. And they've got a couple dudes who are here and have been here in the big league level, but they are really struggling to get those one or two extra guys who can kind of fill in as middle to long relief without giving up a ton of runs.
Their top four guys have been, I would say the month of June for their top four guys was all really good. Milner didn't give up a run. Piamps was really good. Peguero threw more games than anyone in baseball. Devin Williams, outside of the one Twins game, was Devin Williams. So that's more than enough to win you pretty much every single game that you're winning late. Those guys are very good. I do get the thought when seeing some of the guys that have come up and gone down and struggled and whatnot that have come through the bullpen that, like, Abner Uribe is at this point certainly as good as these guys, if not better, probably better. Higher ceiling. There might be something there with, like, you don't, they don't want to start his service clock until later in the year. You know, well, Super 2's passed by now, so.
Yeah, I'm guessing they don't think he's ready. They don't think command is there yet. That's my guess.
So it doesn't really seem to come down to, like, the service time to me. They don't feel he's ready. Like, I don't think he's necessarily – I don't get the sense that he's on the cusp of a call-up either. It's just, like, they're calling up some guys, and I'm pretty sure Ebner that I'm pretty sure Ebner is better than. But, yeah, I would not stake too much on him being here anytime in the near future. But it might be – it would be interesting, maybe late in the season to call him up and see what he's got.
Yeah, you would think sooner if they really want to use him as a reliever. I mean, they could certainly have him as a September addition, but there are going to be plenty of guys that they could add in September. So I don't know about that. I mean, Jansen Junk is still a possibility, even if he's not a starter type. You know, Trevor McGill is back in – this is my vacation brain. He did get sent back to Nashville, right? He accepted the assignment. I wasn't sure if he... Oh, no, he was optioned, wasn't he? He had options remaining.
He was optioned, yeah. He had an option left.
So he's still down there. I mean, you look at the AAA roster now, just littered with guys who played for the Brewers this year, and many of whom were expected to be with the Brewers. I don't know about Alex Claudio's on that list. I don't know if you thought he would be with the Brewers necessarily, but McGill spent a lot of time up there. JC Mejia, Tyson Miller, Ethan Small, Peter Strzelecki, talked about Jansen Junk and Uribe. You've still got Mike Brasso down there. Keston Hira is down there. Abraham Toro has been here. Another guy that we have to talk about, Luis Urias. Tyrone Taylor rehabbing here. So a lot of guys that I guess I would not have expected to be on this Brewers roster are there, taking the spots of these gentlemen. So I mentioned Luis Urias. That's one of the bigger stories of the week. He was sent to AAA. He's just struggling, and the Brewers are kind of, I think, at a point in the season with their offense where they have to start making some moves that might even only resonate in the short term. You know, you've got to maximize what you got. And if they have an opportunity to option a player who's struggling, they're going to take it because they can't afford for him to work it out. They've got too many guys who are trying to work it out. Rowdy Tellez and Willy Adames have not been good this year on offense, and that is creating a bit of a struggle. Also, Jesse Winker has had a lot of struggles, although he picked it up quite a bit this week in New York and Pittsburgh. But you've got some guys who are underperforming. They can't have guys on the fringes also underperforming. So that was kind of what I took away from that. Like, okay, we've hit the point of the season where we are not being patient anymore. Maybe that's not quite how they look at Luis Urias. So just give me the sense of what your take is from that particular roster move.
With Urias, I think it would have made sense. Like, they could have sent Andre Monasterio down and kept Urias up, but I think it makes sense to get him playing every day and try to, like, get him, his feet under him a little more and, like, have some success at some point this season, because he just hasn't had that. He struggled at AAA during his rehab assignment. He was pretty bad at the plate when they called him back up at the start of June. So he just needed more out of that spot. And, you know, with Terang had been hitting the ball well, and they just felt like at that particular point in time, the totality of what Bryce Terang brings you is more than what Luis Urias brings you, which is not something that I expected to say when it was like kind of the reverse of how it was when Terang was sent down. A large reason why he was sent down was because Urias came back, the roster was crunched a little bit, and he had been struggling. So it's the tides turned for about a month.
Yeah, and Bryce Terang, like we pointed out, was pretty good at AAA. Started out maybe a little slow first couple games, but it was doing really well and merited a call back up. He's flashing that strong defense. He hit a gritty grounder that helped the Brewers put some insurance runs on the board on Sunday in Sunday's game. But he's had a couple big hits already for the Brewers since coming back. So Bryce Terang, it feels like again, Bryce Terang has found something a little bit. He's not going to be an offensive juggernaut, but he is somebody that is playing better than Luis Urias. So it makes perfect sense, especially when you throw in that glove. Okay, let's talk a little more about Friday's game, this walk-off loss against the Pirates. Matt Busch serving up a home run to Carlos Santana. He was one out away from locking down this game. The Brewers led in this game 4-0. They had two separate four-run leads. It led 7-3 at one point. They gave all of that back. Thomas Pannone, again, was in there for some of that, but Matt Busch coming in to try to lock things down in the ninth with the team severely depleted in terms of bullpen options. You talked about those big four guys. Well, they'd all been used a, a ton of times in the preceding few days. Elvis Peguero, like, and Hobie Milner, I think, 4 times in 5 days. Like, they needed a game where somebody else stepped up to get those final outs. They did not get it. Matt Bush, designated for assignment after the game. The midseason acquisition last year has simply not worked out. You know, the move made sense to me. It still makes sense to me. They just haven't gotten anything out of him. Obviously, the Brewers tried to see if he could round back into shape this year in 2023. They gave him he had an injury designation for a while, had a chance to work through some things. It just has not happened. I still feel like Matt Bush has a decent pitcher in him, but not a guy who gives up as many home runs as he did. So, and Thomas Pinone also got designated for assignment. So the Brewers, again, you know, they're being more aggressive as we get later into the season. So I don't know if you think there's a scenario where Matt Bush could have worked out. I felt like he was the same as Taylor Rogers. Like, they came here and they were bad last year in a very short sample, but there were some peripheral numbers that suggested they could still be good. Taylor Rogers, God bless him, got an amazing contract with the Giants. He has been very good this year. He has bounced back, as I think you could have foreseen happening. Matt Bush just didn't happen. I don't know if he's just not going to be able to pitch in the big leagues if he's got this problem with home runs, but I don't know. I still think there's a good pitcher in there. I just don't think the Brewers could afford to be patient anymore.
It was very clear his time was done. Very, very clear. That was, yeah, that was about it. He was on a very short leash after coming back from the injury anyway. Like, the stuff was still the same as it was before he got hurt, which, in other words, was not great. Like, the velocity was down. He kind of needs the velocity because he doesn't have the command. The curveball hadn't been great either. Like, those two pitches that he got burned by in that ninth inning were both fastballs that he tried to elevate, and he just could not blow it past McCutchen or Santana. It was tough to watch. You kind of had to worry going into that inning that this might not end well. And then he's kind of in a spot to get out of it. I don't think Carlos Santana was a great matchup for him there, but you don't walk Santana to put the winning run on for Jack Sawinski, who's also a good hitter. So at the end of the day, it was just time. Trade did not work out. Brewers trades have not worked out for relievers. I did the numbers. I think it's like a 5.70 ERA is what I figured out from the 5 relievers they've acquired at the deadline the last 2 years. The highest WAR that they've gotten from those relievers was Trevor Rosenthal.
Mm. Oh, wow. And that is a stab to the heart.
He threw 0 pitches with the Brewers.
In other words, in case this isn't abundantly clear, the players they added had negative value. And the guy that they traded for inexplicably, who never played, at 0 was the best option of the several.
Yeah, I will say... since Matt Arnold's taken over, the relievers that they've acquired have been pretty good.
Yeah, well, Elvis Peguero, man.
I mean, Piams, Peguero, like, it was kind of under the radar stuff, and those guys have been excellent. Bryce Wilson's been solid, and then you kind of can see some interesting stuff in some of the other guys, like Trevor McGill's an interesting arm. I don't know if he's ever going to be anything special for them, but he's had some success too, so.
Yeah, it's
trending in the right direction for this deadline, I guess, because they got to break this streak.
I do feel like there's just such an element of luck when you're talking about deadline relievers. I mean, we all go back to Drew Pomeranz in 2019, who was awesome when the Brewers acquired him and was really essential for them when they run to the wild card game. But also, Drew Pomeranz had a lot of injuries after that. Like, if they had required him for a full season or paid the contract that he was paid after that, it would have been a disaster. They just happened to get him for that little window of time when he was really on top of his game. And I feel like with relief pitchers, especially when you're talking about a 2-month sample, it could mean nothing. It could mean everything. You know, maybe like with Matt Bush's case, it was an indication. You know, Matt Bush doesn't have a lot of track record. He was a risk in that sense. He's also a risk in the optics. He's got some stuff in his past that he seems to have moved beyond, and everybody seems to be comfortable with that too, but you know, that was a risky play just by virtue of the fact that he hasn't been a pitcher for that long, and it didn't pan out. But he could easily go to another team and rediscover what he lost, just like Taylor Rogers did, or just like I'm trying to think of an example. John Curtis got hurt, so that's the wrong example, but they've had other relievers who didn't work out and then, you know, had normal careers after that, or just slightly above or below average careers. It's a huge crapshoot. So even when they get guys at the deadline, I would hope that it's a little bit of an understanding that this may or may not work out, and it may have nothing to do with the evaluation. It might just be what it is. Baseball is tricky that way, and you never really know with relief pitchers especially over such a small sample size. So, again, the Brewers tied for first place, 45-39 with the Cincinnati Reds, 5.5 games ahead of the Pirates. It's a two-horse race all of a sudden with the Reds and the Brewers. Reds still playing very good baseball. They have still won, you know, 6 of their last 10. They cooled off a little bit from their, obviously, white-hot 12-in-a-row run, but they are still lurking, still winning baseball games. And, you know, the Brewers are just as good, really. They're still slightly better at home as they come home with the Cubs on the docket here to start this final week before the All-Star break. But they're you know, two games above 500 on the road at this point after that 7-3 road trip. So it's kind of an even standing for them, which I find kind of interesting. Reds in the same boat. Reds are also that way. They're even between the road and home games. Kurt, I think we're moving in now to what more granular details from the week. It's 3 up, 3 down, baby. Why don't you get us started? You wrote a story that I really liked this week that you might want to be starting with involving the New York traffic scene.
Yeah, the Brewers were spurned on their travels to Citi Field a little bit. The president was in town, apparently, which I wasn't aware of going into the day. I'm not sure the players were either. Actually, I'm not sure how many people entirely were. But as the second team bus was leaving the hotel to go to the park, usually about a drive about 45 minutes through normal New York traffic, they got a few blocks and realized we're not going anywhere. Apparently, the president is here. And the starting pitcher, Adrian Hauser, was on that train or on that bus, which made them realize we might have to take the train. Like, we got to get this guy to the ballpark. So they followed Hobie Milner to the subway. There was a stop near where the bus was located. They took the blue line to the purple line, and the purple line takes you right to Citi Field. So it's not the hardest thing in the world to figure out, but the idea of like 7 big league players getting off a bus and then taking a train in some track suits, they're all wearing their like team track suits, is pretty funny. And what's even funnier is no one recognized them.
So seriously, nobody came up to them at all.
Corbin Burns was on a train for 45 minutes in New York, a packed train, and not a single person said anything to them.
That's ridiculous. That's incredible. I guess being the Cy Young doesn't necessarily mean you have to throw away your anonymity. That's fantastic. Yeah, that was a really fun story at jsonline.com if you had a chance to check that out. Hobie Milner leading the way. Gets a Boy Scout badge for that, right? Like leading his teammates. That's orienteering, I think, finding a way through tough circumstances to get your way to the ballpark and get there in time for the game. Adrian Hauser, another solid outing for him, I suppose. So we should mention that. My first for 3 up, 3 down, Joey Weimer. We haven't said his name yet, but he had a big, big, big home run to kick off the week in a 2-1 win for the Brewers over the New York Mets. That's a guy who's still doing his thing. It's not necessarily a banner week for him per se, but still, he's helping things out. He's helping out. He has been a very good regular major leaguer for the Brewers this year, and the ceiling is really, really high, and he's only going to get better. So another booming shot to center field for Weimer that ended up being the difference in the game. Very nice.
Another rookie that should be on the story up or down, Bryce Turang. We talked a little bit about him being back. Well, he's back. He swung the bat up pretty well. Actually, Sunday wasn't a great game for him, but he's hit some balls hard. He had a 2-run double on Friday. But the play that stood out the most was a complete lunging, diving stop on a ground ball in New York. Robbed Daniel Vogelback of an RBI hit with that play. It was in the Adrian Hauser start in Turang's first game back on Thursday. The Brewers won that game by a run, so that proved to be a pretty big play. It did not take long for Bryce Turang's defense to be back on full display.
Yeah, he is really special, and obviously he got Vogelbach by plenty, but that was ticketed for center field. It would have been a run scoring play, like you said. Okay, Turang is also my number two, not necessarily for a good thing, but so he alluded this earlier on Sunday, hits this dribbler to the left, or I should say to the right of the pitcher's mound, and the ball gets thrown away. Two runs score that it's a huge moment in the game. It's two really key late insurance runs. It was a 3-2 game at that point, and then the Brewers added on to make it a 5-2 game. Brian Anderson scores from first base on the play, but in the chaos of this, where the ball gets thrown away once and then back into the infield, Bryce Terang did not realize that the ball there was nobody at second base. So he could have been running to second base this whole time and finally makes up his mind late, and the ball comes to the catcher. The catcher's still able to throw Bryce Terang out to end the inning. So ultimately a couple of base running errors, like compounding each other, but a funny play, but a big one because it got the Brewers. That was created by his speed. The throw was forced from the pitcher because Bryce Terang is, you know, fast as lightning and probably beats the throw anyway. It was just another example of the rookie speed that we've seen on this team paying dividends, and Brewers ended up needing those runs. It was nice. They win the game 6-3, so I guess technically they didn't necessarily need them, but in a game where William Contreras had the big blow, the booming three-run homer, they get it done with power, and then they get it done with speed. It's a nice combination for the Brewers.
I'll wrap my segment of this up by talking about Corbin Burnes' start on Saturday. He was perfect through 5, JR. It was very good. I thought there was a chance he might do it. It's really hard to throw a perfect game. So it's all kind of relative of how much what kind of chance you think a guy is going to actually do it when they're, you know, only 5 innings in. But boy, oh boy, he was so sharp. And then it kind of fell apart on him in the 6th inning. He just lost his command, but still ended up being a good start. 7 innings, 2 runs. I think he struck out 8. But those 5 innings were about as good as he's looked ever. I think there's been a lot of really good stretches within games, but that one was certainly up there. Just the precision with which he was carving up the Pirates. Like, he put everything where he wanted at every point. I thought he sequenced really well too, going with the off-speed stuff.
All right, I'll close it down with a look at the standings halfway through the year and the schadenfreude that Brewers fans are almost certainly feeling. Steve Cohen gave a press conference. He, of course, the Mets owner, the multi-gajillionaire Mets owner, talking about how disappointing the Mets had been. And that was, I believe that was in the aftermath of that first loss, that 2-1 win for the Brewers, that Joey Weimer homer we talked about. The Mets ended up winning the next game. Brewers win the series, though, win the next two. And the Mets fans are anxious. They're spending all this money and they have not seen the results. They go into the new week 9 games under 500, 19 games out of first behind the Braves in that loaded NL East. But the Brewers got to feel kind of okay about that. Here they are, a winning team, not breaking the bank, and the Mets are struggling. The Padres, a team that spends, and obviously Josh Hader is on that team. He hasn't been used very much, but when he's used, he's still effective. He's on the team, and the Padres aren't getting it done either. They're 38-46. They're 11.5 out of first in the NL West. They're not in last place, but they might as well be that far down. And then, of course, in their own division, you got the St. Louis Cardinals, who still just have not hit a groove. They're 35-48. They're 9.5 out. They're by far the seller team in the NL Central. Seller meaning the bottom. Doesn't mean they're going to be selling at the deadline, but we're getting closer here. We're halfway through the season. We're a month away from the trade deadline. And What is St. Louis going to do? Like, is St. Louis ever going to figure it out? They just cannot seem to turn the corner. And that is obviously good news for the Brewers, who always seem to be fighting with the Cardinals. So I still am not in a place where I'm prepared to rule anyone out in the NL Central, including the St. Louis Cardinals. But it has been it has been an interesting first half of the season. I don't think I would have expected that the Marlins and the Diamondbacks would for sure have better records than the Brewers at this point in the year. But here we are, the Giants also in that mix as well. So it's definitely not the first half of the season I would have anticipated or anyone would have anticipated, but the Brewers can't hate where they stand at this point, especially after this really nice road trip. All right, that'll do it for 3 Up, 3 Down. Let's go to let's take a step back in time. It's Remember When. All right, Kurt, this one should be really short, but it's going to start with a trivia question. In light of Corbin Burnes throwing 5 perfect innings to open up that game on Saturday, in the same week that Domingo Germán of the New York Yankees threw a perfect game, the 24th perfect game in modern baseball history, very exciting moment for baseball nerds, people who love this, the statistical oddity of that. I wonder, obviously we know the Brewers have never thrown a perfect game. They only have 2 no-hitters on their docket, neither was perfect, but do you know, Kurt, the only pitcher in baseball history to throw a perfect game and also spend at least some time with the Milwaukee Brewers?
Chanhill Park.
Chanhill Park is actually a really, really good guess. Did not play for the Brewers, did not throw a perfect game, so neither... you were maybe thinking Hideo Nomo, who threw at least a couple no-hitters.
I was thinking Chanhill Park. I thought he threw a perfect game for some reason.
I see. Well, he does not come remotely close.
That was an immaculate grid fail, right?
You really blew it. But listen, it was going to be really hard because the answer is Len Barker. Len Barker is not a superstar pitcher. He was kind of a surprise when he threw this perfect game May 15th, 1981, playing for Cleveland. But he only played 1 year for the Milwaukee Brewers, and this was in the final stages of his career, 1987. He'd been released by the Braves in 86. He had he really started to struggle. Had surgery in 84. It cost him the 85 season, and then in 86, he'd been released, and he briefly signed with Milwaukee. Actually spent most of the year in the minors with AAA Denver. He made 11 starts for the Brewers that year, but most of his work, actually, AAA Denver. Can you imagine throwing a perfect game and spending the final year of your career, you know, playing in AAA? Somewhere that just doesn't seem like a logical. But Len Barker, this was I believe the 10th perfect game that was thrown in Major League history. It was against the Toronto Blue Jays, and it was a surprise. He struck out 11 of the last 17 batters he faced that night. There was like 7,000 people there to see it. It was a weeknight game, and so it wasn't really one of the more well attended perfect games, but. He had a nice little run there. Had obviously a nice moment in time, and then closed his career with the Milwaukee Brewers. So, just a little nugget, little note. Nothing exciting that he did with Milwaukee, but wanted to touch on that in a week where perfect games were top of mind. All right, Kurt, let's close this thing down. It is, as we close every podcast, with your take of the week. It is Kurt Blanche.
Ryan Braun.
Yeah, JR, there was a point there not too long ago in this podcast where I was worried that you were going to spoil what I was going to deliver here. You mentioned a pitcher on San Diego Padres. Could you refresh my memory on who that was?
Oh, would that be Josh Hader? Josh Hader.
Josh Hader. So I know the last time I was on here, I came out with this tape that the Brewers should be very cautious about what they do at this deadline. And I this might deviate from that a little bit. So there might be some mixed messaging going on here, but that's okay because it's worth it. And I also don't think it's that much of mixed messaging when you really boil it down. The Brewers, JR,
yes,
should trade for Josh.
Okay.
This is my diabolical plan, and I am 100% convinced it would be the best idea possible. Not only does it make a team significantly better, rental relievers, theoretically, like, aren't going to cost you that much in the long term. Like, now, none of the relievers that the Brewers have gotten have been on a Josh Hader level at recent deadlines. They've given up some big league players, but aside from Reese Olson, like, he wasn't even that high of a prospect. Usually they haven't had to give up that much in capital to get those players. So, yeah, the return shouldn't be exorbitant. The bullpen would be excellent. But most importantly, JR, the vibes would be fixed completely.
The vibes would be back. That's right. Now, they're not trading when they get these guys for players that aren't maybe top-shelf prospects. They're not getting closers. They're not getting top 10 relievers in baseball. They're getting mid-level guys that no one has probably paid much attention to outside of the guys who follow those teams. So I don't know if they quite have the package to do that. Well, they might theoretically have the package, but
they have the package to do it. They certainly do. The thing is, with kind of when you have the names like Josh Hader that have the pedigree to go along with the profile, a bidding war can lead to, you know, some team that is not the Brewers. A team that's more likely to do it would maybe overpay or just pay something that maybe pay a fair market value. The Brewers might not be super adamant about doing that, but ignore what I just said there, because that's not part of my take. The Brewers should trade for Gosman.
Yes. I don't think San Diego is going to want to absorb the optics of, oh, we screwed up so badly that we're now trading back the player we added specifically with the intent to be one of the best teams in the National League, and do so for a lesser package, because Josh Hader will only theoretically be with his next team for a couple months.
They're going to trade, like, they should trade Josh Hader.
Yeah, they absolutely should.
Otherwise, they're going to lose. Like, they're not going to extend him at this point. It does not seem likely, and nor would it be smart for him to do 2 months out from free agency. They should trade him. They're not going. They are not going anywhere. He's expiring. I wonder what they'll do about Soto. That'll be an interesting one as well. But Hader seems like the most obvious name.
Came into Sunday with a 1.21 ERA in 31 games pitched, a WHIP below one. He had slightly better numbers than that in his really banner. Well, not slightly. He was really good in 2021 with the Brewers, but that's about as good as he can get. I mean, this is vintage Josh Hader. He did not his problems from last year did not compound into the new season. So and like you said, San Diego, like we said, San Diego is near the back of the pack in the NL West. They probably will want to get out from underneath. You know, they'll probably want to alleviate some of their concerns financially and rebuild their farm system a little bit. Yeah, Josh Hader's probably going to be on the block. I have a hard time believing they're gonna be looking to strike a deal with Milwaukee, but I guess you never know. Strange things happen in the game of baseball. That would certainly be a story. Holy smokes. Well, would it be crazy if he came back and helped the Brewers sort of galvanize the bullpen for a run toward the playoffs? All right, Kurt, I think that's going to do it for this edition of Microbrew. Any last thoughts before I send you away?
No, I think we have done our jobs.
We have done our jobs. Pittsburgh was a good time. Furries were out in force.
Furries were out in force. Furries. That should have been one of my 3-up-3 downs, just furries.
Furries, yes. Andrew McCutchen delivering again on his outstanding annual tweet. And the Brewers, well, you said this. The Brewers, like, 3 out of the last 4 times or something that the Furries convention?
Four straight years that Anthrocon has been held because 2020 was skipped. So going back to 2019, the Brewers have been in town.
Did you just say Anthrocon? Is that what it's called? Is it called Anthrocon?
That's what it's called, yes. The Furry Convention. It has a name.
I can't do it, Kurt. That's just... Okay. All right. Well, that's
there,
good.
There have been yes, 40 friends at my hotel.
Come on home, Kurt. The Brewers are going to be in town with the Chicago Cubs coming into American Family Field. A lot of day games this week with the 4th of July holiday. They're going to be 110 first pitch on Monday. It's a 3:10 on Tuesday. Then a night game, another 110 on Thursday. Then the Cincinnati Reds, that team that with which they're tied for first place, last 3 games before the All-Star break. Reds will be in for a couple day games and a night game on Friday, so it should be a lot of fun. Kurt, thank you for joining us. We will chat with you again very soon. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. We'll be back with you again next week with the All-Star Game Preview Edition of Microbrew. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.